Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is great to have your company for another episode of the show. Now, most of us understand and appreciate that if we're going to grow a business, we need to be able to build a team, because without people, we're not going to be able to grow a business. And of course, we also understand that building a team is sometimes one of the hardest things that we do as practice owners, and getting the people part right in our business can be quite tricky. So my guest today is Annie Hyman-Pratt, and she's written a book called The People Part. And I really believe this is one of the best books I've ever read or seen when it comes to leadership and building teams. It's like a field manual. So I'm going to encourage each and every one of you to get a copy of this book, because I think it should be mandatory reading for anyone in business. So go ahead, grab a copy of the book. But when I spoke to Annie on the podcast, we covered a whole bunch of things. We spoke about why the people part is so important and what it looks like when it's done well. We spoke about self-leadership, you know yourself to lead yourself. We spoke about uncovering those styles of leadership and where we can come unstuck. We spoke about agreements that we unconsciously and consciously make in a workplace that really power the workplace forward, or if not done well, hold it back, and how to overcome that. So it's a wide-ranging, really interesting conversation with Annie. And as I said, this is full of practical, useful, applicable information that I know is going to make a difference to you as you grow your team and therefore grow your business. So can't wait to share that with you. Now, before we get to Annie, a couple of quick things I want to share with you. If you're a motivated and driven practice owner and you want to have more from your practice, whether it's earning more money, having more free time, enjoying greater levels of freedom and enjoyment in life, then I'm encouraging you to come across to the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, because in that group, we've got a bunch of resources, a bunch of tools, a bunch of things to help you on that journey. Whether it's earning more money, having more time, or increasing freedom, there's something there for you. And the second resource I want to share with you is the upcoming Dental Growth Summit of 2022. Now, this summit is going to be a panel of experts talking about various elements of your practice, whether it's your marketing, whether it's your legals, whether it's adding revenue streams, getting your strategy right, getting your finance and cash flow right. All of those things are going to be covered. And I'm really grateful to be one of the speakers at that event. And there's going to be other great speakers there as well. It's a free event. It's an online event that's going to be run from September 5 to September 8. And we're going to be running sessions in the evening from 7:30 in the evening till 9 p.m. And you can come and join us for those sessions. It's totally free. It's a gift to you from all of the presenters. And what I'm going to suggest you do is go ahead and register. And all you need to do is head across to practicesuccess.org/dentalgrowth2022. So that web address again is practicesuccess.org/dentalgrowth2022. Come and join us, totally free. There's going to be something there for everyone, whether you're growing your practice, scaling your practice, or everything in between. There's going to be something there for you. But for now, let's get on to our conversation with Annie Hyman-Pratt. Here she is. Annie Hyman-Pratt, thank you so much for taking the time to come and join us all the way from Southern California. How's things in your neck of the woods today?
They're good. They're a little overcast, which is unusual for Southern California, but it has not been too hot.
Fantastic. Well, you're in summer, we're in winter. I'm recording this particular episode from a little hotel room in Sydney, and I can tell you in Sydney today, it is very gloomy, very overcast, and we're in the middle of winter. So we're all looking forward to a bit of your Southern Californian summer coming our way. So we're looking for that seasonal change.
Yeah.
Annie, I've been really looking forward to recording this podcast, and you came and spoke to our boardroom members back in March, and I remember actually also I was in a hotel room for that episode as well, because that was when a convention called ADX was on. At that particular time, and what I'd really like to pick up the conversation about today, is you have authored a wonderful book called The People Part, and the subtitle is 7 Agreements Entrepreneurs and Leaders Make to Build Teams, Accelerate Growth, and Banish Burnout for Good. And I've got a copy of this book in my hot little hand here, and it's like a textbook in a sense that it's a how-to manual, not textbook in the sense that it's theoretical, but a textbook in the sense that it's like a field manual. Let me just call it that instead, but it's really practical. So I want to firstly say how much I enjoyed the book.
Thank you.
And thank you for writing it. What prompted you to write it in the first instance?
Yeah. now I've had kind of a longish career, right? More than 3 decades. So
I know that feeling. How did that happen, right?
And during the last couple decades, especially during the last decade, I would say, I had so many people come to me and say, Annie, what books do you recommend that we read for leadership and team and entrepreneurial business? And I never had a full book to recommend. Hmm. It's like, well, you can do this part of this book and a little bit of this other book. But this third book, the first half's good. Pay no attention to the second half. And so I wrote this book because I felt strongly that I needed something I could hand people that I felt great about. Like, this is how you do it. This is how you do the people side of business. And when people think of business, you mostly think of things like strategy and systems and processes, right? In fact, that's been a big thing for a long time now, is you fix everything with a system and process.
Yes.
But, you know, my whole career has been really about, I love systems and process, and I actually have a financial background, but no system or process works if you don't have good people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Your people are your number one thing that you need to be successful.
It's a really interesting thing. And I was talking to you off air that sometimes that we have sometimes a love-hate relationship with our team, in the sense that we love our team, they're great, and sometimes we hate managing them. And so I wanted to ask whether other industries had expressed maybe the same sentiment in different words or whatever it is, but have you come across that before?
Oh, yes. In fact, since my primary market, or the vast, vast majority of my clients, are entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Okay? And dentists are a type of entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Because you get your own business going, right?
Yep.
No, I have yet to meet an entrepreneur who started their business saying, I would like to have a large team. In fact, I would like to start a business so I have a team.
Yeah.
Nobody says that, right? They want to impact the world. They want to make some income, have a nice lifestyle. They want to learn and grow. They want to share their expertise. And nobody's thinking, I would like to have people. But you've got to have people to expand past, a very small business, I guess it would. And the thing about entrepreneurs is that on top of wanting to, change the world, they also are, they're very ambitious about it. And so it's like, to get where you want to go, you need people.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? And I remember hearing someone say that a small business is not a small business by accident. And it's basically a choice or a decision to not build a team or to build a large team. I'm curious to ask about your background, because you kind of grew up in business in a sense. You had your mum and dad's business, and then you obviously went off to university and studied. I'm wondering how those experiences shaped your work now.
Well, first of all, I did grow up, I think of it as growing up with business at the dinner table. So my parents would be talking about the coffee bean. They started it in 1968 is when they opened their first retail store.
Yeah.
They started it in a little earlier than that, but they started the retail stores. And so then when I was in high school, I remember listening to my parents do problem solving at the dinner table, often over people issues. Often over, right? Like, which manager was not doing a good job? Which store needed more employees? Somebody that was leaving my mom's accounting team. And so the majority of the things we were talking about were about people. So that's one of the first things that struck me. And then when I was operating the coffee bean, after I went to university, I came back and was the CEO, first the general manager, and then the CEO of the coffee bean. Mm-hmm. Because my dad had to retire for health reasons.
Yeah, okay.
And I came back, especially after college and after working in a big, accounting and finance firm. I came back thinking, I got this. Like, I'm going to, I'm the super strategist here.
Yeah,
I know all these ways to make us more profitable and grow faster. And I found that, oh my gosh, I had to learn how to do the people part, or I couldn't make anything happen. It's like, what was I going to do? I certainly have worked in the stores a lot, but I can't be, you know, at the bar in every single unit working the espresso machine.
So obviously your business continued to grow. You had to figure things out on the run. And I was reading in your book, you got some fairly frank feedback from one of your team members on a particular occasion about this isn't working kind of thing. And I suspect that maybe people on this podcast, maybe they've received that feedback or maybe not, or maybe the team have just thought it and not said it.
Yes.
But I suspect that most of us get to an inflection point with our leadership styles where we have to kind of really evaluate how we're doing leadership and how we're building teams and how we're doing the people part. I wanted to ask you about that inflection point for you so that others might be able to just reflect on that for themselves and go, maybe there's something to think about here.
Yeah. Do you mean the inflection point of like when I know it's my leadership issue, not a business issue? When a person, I know it's time to let a person go instead of keep them?
Well, all of those things. But what I was particularly thinking about is in the book you spoke about one of your leaders saying to you, Annie, this isn't working. Your leadership style is not working.
Yes.
That takes, I believe, a great deal of courage to say that to the boss, right? I think that's a gift.
Yes.
Not everyone has someone on their team courageous enough to call that.
Yes.
And so what I'm wondering is how do we have that self-awareness to then go, how am I going in my role? How am I going with the people part?
Yes, yes. Okay, so I think the first thing to know is that your self-awareness is what you want to be aware of is when nobody's giving you feedback anymore. When nobody's bringing problems and talking about what they could do for solutions. They might be bringing complaints, but that's not the same. When people aren't talking to you about what could be different about how something impacted them. Like when all of that goes away, the interesting thing is for an entrepreneur, that can actually feel pretty good. No one's challenging me. Okay. But if you're not getting feedback and you can see that your business still has problems, right? It's not getting the results you want, then it's pretty reliable to conclude it's you. it's your leadership that's going to need some work to break through this. And the reason you want to break through it is because you can't grow and do better without leveraging your team.
Yeah.
And for humans, they are, they're not robots. You can't program them. You have to provide an environment where they want to do good work.
So I guess the key then is beware of silence.
Yes.
Beware of 100% compliance and 100% agreement because, we want to make sure we've got constructive disagreement, I guess is probably a phrase. When I heard you speak prior to inviting to our group, you picked a phrase or you spoke about a concept that has been rattling around my head for a while and you kind of articulated it really well. And I wanted to talk about the different levels of leadership. And I sometimes talk about primary, secondary and tertiary leadership, which is just a fancy way of saying beginning with self-leadership, leading others and building leadership teams or developing other leaders. But I wanted to start with self-leadership, Annie, because it seems to me that that's a pretty foundational piece.
Absolutely. It is. It's the foundational piece of human achievement. I think it's that big. So whether you're talking about, achieving in a sports or art or anything like that, or you're talking about achieving in business or achieving with other people, like the self-leadership part is the most important foundation from my point of view.
Yes.
Yeah. Because the thing that's so important for achievement and why human beings are so extraordinary is because we have this frontal lobe part of our brain. We have this executive function and these, you know, a way of processing things, of being creative, of innovating, of cooperating with others, of, you know, being able to, gosh, build the most massive telescope ever that can see, you know, billions of years away now. And all of that happens here in this front part of our brain. So the thing about self-leadership is, it is all about being able to access that part, being in yourself in a place where you can still access that part of your brain and use it. Okay, so also as humans, we all have had the experience, and if you have toddlers, you'll see this experience on a daily basis of not being in control of your emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not being in control. And, you know, toddlers have a tantrum on the outside. Us, you know, adults usually have a tantrum on the inside. And the thing is when you're in a highly emotional place, when you're triggered by something, you can no longer think well. You literally cannot focus outside yourself. We call the opposite of self-leadership is self-protection. That's where these emotional reactions are born out of. When I sense a threat, which physiologically it's like all my senses are bringing in information, and it comes to my amygdala first, and the amygdala is the first thing to say is that, you know, is that okay or is that dangerous? And if it hits this place and it's like that is dangerous, then it will literally almost not let me access the better part of my brain, right? Then I go into fight or flight. When we get triggered, we literally move our blood. Our blood flow goes to our big muscles.
Yeah.
So we can run away or fight.
Yeah.
And in business, especially, we need, it's a thinking sport, right? We need to be able to think and interact from a quite a neutral place. And so when we're in this emotionally reactive spot, not only are we not focusing on anything outside, we are self-obsessed. We're like, I'm not okay. Here's all the ways I'm not okay. You know, and then we will have different ways of expressing that. Some people will blame or criticize, other people will hide and avoid. But we, you know, whatever we're doing, it becomes about us, not about achieving the outcome.
So that's a really interesting thought process. And I've got a lot of things I'd like to pick up around that, please, Annie, because we could do a whole podcast on self-leadership, right?
Yeah.
But what I'm taking away from that and what I'm hearing is that when we're triggered, our emotional being gets kicked into overdrive. We start reacting emotionally rather than being able to access our critical thinking capabilities. We go into a protective mode. We either shut down, blame, yes, and so on and so forth. So perhaps the obvious question that follows that is, how does one stop oneself from being triggered? How do we regulate our emotions better? How are we able to deal with that external world in a little more healthy way so that we're not triggered and we can continue to think?
Yes, exactly. The first thing is, I think, to kind of recognize or know deep down, you're not effective when you're emotionally triggered. So that one is just recognizing that. And I think that most of the planet doesn't recognize it. Because in the moment, you know, in the moment, like if I'm in an argument with my spouse, in the moment I'm thinking, no, I need to win this thing. Right? That's not the moment where I'm, you know, where I'm good at thinking this is going to have a bad knock-on effect, right? So the first thing is to realize that our thinking is flawed in those moments. And the second thing is to really know that I need to, how would I say, be most effective. This will benefit me the most if I can get myself back to a good state, a regulated state. And so to do that, the first thing is to recognize when I'm in that emotionally triggered space, literally to be like, oh, there I go again, right? And then at that moment to be able to pause, especially if you're talking or doing something, right? Especially if you are banging away at your keyboard or you are maybe hiding and binging a Netflix series, is really to recognize, oh, here I go again, and then pause and change your state. Meaning we need to get the emotional energy to come down. And that part is going to depend on, your personal, preferences. So for some people, that's a walk around the block.
Yeah.
For other people, it's a bunch of deep breaths, right? For me, I often go get a cup of coffee and then I throw the toy for the dog. So it's like change your state, because whatever your thinking is when you're triggered is not good.
No, it's really not. And I can think of times in my own life where I've had some spectacular failures in leadership, and without exception, every single one of those was when I was in a heightened emotional state.
Yes.
Without exception. It's embarrassing to say that out loud, because you reflect on those things and you think, wow, I could have done so much better in those circumstances. Yeah. However, we are all human. We all have our foibles and our flaws. So how do you manage that change of state while also practicing a bit of self-love and a bit of self-care for the times you do get it wrong? Because, again, we're not flawless robots ourselves, just like our team are not flawless robots.
That's right. We're not. It's a shame that we don't recognize it in business, because we certainly recognize it in sports, right? Like, I watch tennis with my husband because he loves that. Most points are made from an unforced error.
Yes.
It's like nobody is expecting perfection. And somehow in business, we think, that's okay for sports, but not for business. It's like, no, actually, we are human. It is going to come with all kinds of mistakes. And when we, and people will say, I'm good with mistakes as long as we learn from it or something like that. But what I find is that they're not good with the kind of mistakes that they're really going to make.
Oh, wow. Annie, that is, I'm going to tell you, that is me to a T. Outwardly, I can say, yes, I understand mistakes. Inwardly, when I see mistakes, a little piece of me dies. Right.
Absolutely.
And I just think, Absolutely. Oh my God.
I think of it as, if you're going to be an entrepreneur or you're going to be any kind of high achiever. Mm. And that's the thing. If you choose to be an entrepreneur, you're choosing to be a high achiever. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do that, your compassion must exceed your ambition.
Ooh.
It must. Because otherwise, every time you fall short, or something happens unexpected that doesn't go well, you can't take it. You will beat yourself up.
Mm.
You will have that internal dissonance of, I know it's supposed to be okay to make a mistake, but really that one shouldn't have happened. I made that one last month and I promised myself I wouldn't do it again, and whatever. It's like, if we can't apply that self-compassion, especially of like, I'm human. I am doing the best I can. And I can't expect that I will not make this mistake again.
Mm.
You're going to need to expect that lots of things are going to go wrong, and that the whole point of being trusting yourself is not trusting that you're going to get it right.
Mm.
It's trusting that you can handle it when it goes badly.
Oh, I really like that. I like that distinction. I think that's a really good distinction. And so many things I'd like to talk to you about, but I do want to ask you about agreements as well, because you say in the subtitle of your book, 7 Agreements Entrepreneurs and Leaders Make. Yeah. And I was thinking about agreements as I was reading your book, and I had to think carefully about, well, what do agreements mean? And, all of us can have a dictionary and kind of get it out, and we all use that word fairly commonly in our day-to-day activities.
Yeah.
But for the purposes of the people part, can you just share with me really what you mean by an agreement? Because I just want to make sure we get that nailed down before we start talking about the 7 different types of agreements.
Totally. So agreements are, in business, how we set situational intentions.
Mm-hmm.
So let me break that down. Okay. So meaning that an agreement is not a promise. Not in business, because we can't promise to be successful, at anything any more than, a basketball player can promise to make a free throw. Probably he'll make it, but there's lots of times they don't.
Yep.
And they're standing still. So the first thing is to know, it's like an agreement is how we set our intentions of what I'm going to do and what you're going to do to achieve the outcome. Yep. And agreements are situational, meaning that we set this agreement with assumptions of how the world looks. It absolutely cannot be a promise, because if the circumstance changes, there's going to be so many times we can't keep the agreement. And it's to know that agreements are good. The whole point is that we can predict what each of us are going to do to get an outcome.
Yeah.
But the minute that prediction is not going to be accurate, we need to go back to the table. And the reason that I think of it as agreements, or why I'm, my gosh, I think it's the foundation of teamwork, is because we need everybody involved to take personal responsibility, take their own responsibility for making good agreements.
Yeah.
For making agreements where, you know, when I say I'm going to do this, chances are I'm going to do it. If I'm not going to do it and I have the chance to tell you something has changed and I have to do it differently, then I'm going to do that. But what I won't do is tell you that I'm going to have this report ready by Friday. And then Friday goes by and I'm like, hey, you know, sorry, I did my best, but I couldn't make the deadline. And, you know, this other project came on my plate. And at that point, you're thinking, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
So, okay, so we're pretty clear about what agreements are about, setting intentions and having to renegotiate those if that can't be met because it's not a promise.
Yes.
What I wanted to ask you then is, what types of agreements do you typically see in a business or an organization or an entrepreneurial group?
Well, first thing is, I think of pretty much everything as an agreement.
Yeah.
They're just different types. So the very first agreement that anybody makes with a company is their role. So it's like when I get hired, you know, if I come into your dental practice, the first thing is like, I don't apply just to work there.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me we're going to agree on what I'm doing.
Yes.
And so that's the very first agreement. And if I come in and I'm noticing, hey, wait a minute, I'm doing some extra things, then I need to discuss that, right? It's like, here's some extra things I'm doing. So I'm not sure if I can do the first part that you're expecting.
Yep.
So your role is your first agreement. Goals and project plans, those are agreements.
Yes.
Because it's like, here's where we're headed. I think of it as like, you know, both of us agree we're going to Paris. Okay. We're going to Paris until somebody says we've changed our mind. We're going to Rome.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Makes sense.
But if you don't tell us where we're going, we don't have we literally don't have a direction, right? So that's an agreement. In business, we have culture. We talk about it as culture, which I always thought is kind of a funny word, but it's basically the implied agreed behaviors that are allowed here. You might be in a culture where people need to be, if you were in my husband's company, people need to be on time, like right on time.
Yep.
So, okay, you will get that. And if you're going to stay working there, you'll know, hey, look, you can't make it here unless you're on time.
Yeah, wow.
And you will be on time, right? So that's kind of an implied agreement. For another company, it might be for customer service that, you know, you might be in a place where it's like, hey, look, we are the customer is always going to come first. If you need to get back to customers right away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and some, you may have a policy about that, but other places you will know. It's like, hey, this is how it works. Everybody behaves that way. So your culture is kind of a, you know, the assumed agreements. They're the ones that aren't maybe specifically called out, but you know they're there.
So that's a really interesting thing. I recorded an episode of the show a couple of weeks ago, and my guest was talking about unwritten ground rules, which is essentially another way of saying what you've said, right?
Yes.
And what's really interesting is, you know, when it comes to culture, Annie, we all understand and appreciate the value that a strong and productive culture can bring. And we all understand the deleterious effects of a, you know, poor culture. I'm curious to get your take about how to rewrite those unspoken agreements. How do you firstly speak it and then rewrite it?
Yes. Yes. Well, the very first thing is to acknowledge that it exists.
Yeah.
That's always sort of the start of anything. It's like, what's really going on right now? Because if we can't admit that, it's very hard to get anywhere. the first thing that everybody's going to need to work on to change a culture is their self-leadership.
Yeah.
Because there's a reason it exists.
Yeah.
For example, lots of entrepreneurs, we have this quiz that we have people take. It's on the website if anybody wants to take it, where we figure out what quadrant you're in for how you deal with stressful situations and how you deal with stress among people.
Okay.
Most entrepreneurs are highly confrontive when things aren't going well. Okay. Most entrepreneurs are like, hey, wait a minute, we need to fix this right now. Right. They're going to say it out loud. They're going to, you know, talk directly to a person. They're going to really insist that something go different right at this minute.
Yep.
Okay. And they want to make decisions quickly. Okay. There are other people who are like, oh my gosh, when something's going wrong, they want to avoid it at all costs.
Yes.
Or like me, before making a decision, it's like, I need a lot of time to make a decision. The more stressed I am, the more time I want.
Yep.
Okay. So the first thing is to notice those kinds of things and be able to call them out. Be able to recognize, hey, look, when you are an entrepreneur who is highly confrontive, it's like that makes sense to you.
Mm.
That is how it works for you. Okay, but that's not everybody. And you have an impact on other people. So it's not that you have to change the way you do everything. But it's to recognize, hey, wait a minute, I have an impact on people. And if I'm highly confrontive, I am pushing people to become highly avoidant. And that's the last thing you want.
And that's where we get the silence.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we talk about it as you want to build an environment that's psychologically safe.
Mm.
That people are safe to take risks, that they are safe to step up and take on more responsibility. But if I'm going to step up and take on more responsibility, and I think that the second I make a mistake, I'm going to get, you know, criticized, embarrassed in front of the team, made to feel bad about myself, you know, I'm going to pass on that.
I absolutely agree. And I think look, again, there's so many things I'd love to touch on there about culture and psychological safety and all those sorts of things. I do want to ask you, though, about building teams of leaders, because
yes,
for a lot of the people that want to scale up their practices or scale up any business, we've already spoken about the need to work through people and with people rather than, you know, trying to do it all ourselves. But I also have found in the past, certainly in a dental practice, there's often a practice manager. And this practice manager typically, not always, typically has started off, you know, maybe out of high school becoming a dental assistant. Then they move to being a dental receptionist or front desk person. Then after a period of time, they have the title of practice manager. Now, let me tell you, the expectations of this poor person, they've got to be an accounts person, a finance wizard, an HR wizard, a marketing wizard. Like that person doesn't exist, right? And so I wanted to ask you a bit about whether you've noticed people being saddled with too many different and disparate responsibilities. And then, okay, well, how do we build a team that covers those responsibilities, but we're not kind of focusing all of our time and energy onto one poor person, expecting them to be the master of all things?
Yes, exactly. And often people are reluctant to hire more people to do those specialties. So as a business grows, the operations become more distinct and specialized.
Mm.
You know, if you start your practice and you have 50 clients, you know, one person can manage that, greet them, do all the scheduling, whatever.
Right? Yeah.
But as you grow, you need all those other functions.
Mm.
As you get the other functions going, you need specialists, the easiest way to say it, in them.
Mm.
So instead of teaching a office manager how to do marketing, you want a marketing person to do marketing.
Yes.
And what usually gets people down about is like, yeah, but I can't manage a marketing person and an accounts person and an HR person and an office manager. So what you're going for is, as you are adding specialists and functions, you want to be developing leadership in those functions so that you aren't managing a function anymore. that the leader is managing the marketing, for example. And it can be a one-person function. That's okay. But what a leader is somebody who can be trusted to deliver the results, meaning they don't have to come to you with every question. They don't need you to find their mistakes. They know when something's going poorly enough that they must come to you. Otherwise, it's going to the thing's going to be in danger. They can interpret what you mean when you say something like, hey, I want us to step up our marketing next month. They won't just be like, well, you didn't tell me what that was, so I didn't do anything.
100%.
Right? So you want people who are like, okay, well, do you mean that I should send out more mailings? Here's my idea for how we would step it up. That's what we're looking for in leadership. And when you have people who can take that level of responsibility, it's so much easier and so much better to lead leaders. That keeps you out of the weeds. It keeps you with your, you know, your finger on the pulse without having to do everything.
I really love and resonate with that, Annie, and that's something that we've been working on with our own business for some time now.
Yeah.
If you get that part right,
yes.
What's the benefit for the business owner? What do they feel? What do they experience?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. So first of all, you lift the ceiling. You lift that oppressive feeling you feel of like, I can't do one more thing. I could not, you know, I want to start a new part of my practice, but when would I even have time to do that?
Yeah.
You get to plan a future. You get to see possibilities for your future because you aren't dealing with, you know, crappy operational emergencies all day long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like your business is running sustainably so that you can dream bigger. And, you know, some entrepreneurs I work with, what they do with all that extra time is they just take time off.
Yeah.
They become 2 day a week people, something like that.
Which is great too. Yeah, that's totally cool. Yeah.
And some people start new big growth projects.
Yeah.
Some people write a book. Some people start a speaking career. I don't know. You know, it's like you get a level of freedom that you didn't have before.
Yeah.
It's much, much more.
I think that's the really important thing because most people go into their own business to create a sense of freedom.
Yes.
And oftentimes they create the opposite. They create a sense of duty or being tied up by the business.
Yes.
And so what I'm hearing you say, and going right back to the self-leadership piece, leading ourselves, developing other leaders, all of those things are designed to create high levels of freedom rather than high levels of feeling bound up or being indentured.
100%.
Yeah. I love that. I just wanted to go back to something you spoke about a moment ago, and I'm sorry I'm bouncing around a little bit, Annie, but you spoke a bit about how people experience us and most entrepreneurs can be a bit forceful and direct and that has an impact. And you spoke about a quiz a moment ago, and I wanted to ask you, is that's on leadingedgeteams.com?
Yes.
Okay.
It sure is.
So,
yep,
so if people go to the website, can they get that? Because I think that'll be
yes,
really helpful and really useful to understand that, you know, I might be behaving in a certain way, but I'm unsure of the impact of that behavior.
That's right. And to get the awareness also that these, I think we call it the superpower quiz, like learn your leadership superpower.
Yeah.
What we find is that those strengths, you know, become major problems when we are using them in times of stress.
Yeah.
Again, we need entrepreneurs to be ambitious and forceful. And that, you know, the whole point of entrepreneurs is like they won't accept the status quo. They're going to go after it and change it.
Yeah.
Great. We need that.
Yeah.
And at the same time, when they have to work with others, they need to be aware that the farther they get out on that continuum, on that polarity, the worse it is to interact.
Yeah.
People can't, they can't work with that. So we want you to understand your superpower so that you can be aware of the downside and lean in. So mine is my operations, my COO, she is opposite of me. So my little avatar, my leadership superpower, is I'm known as the professor.
Okay.
I'm under stress. I'm avoidant and pleasing, people pleasing.
Yeah, okay.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Although if you push me far enough, I will become very demanding. And then I also, but my natural state is avoidant and pleasing. And I like a lot. I'm a thinker and a strategizer. I want more time to make decisions. I'm not a fast decision maker. Okay. So my COO, she's the opposite. And when we are struggling, meaning when we are having a difference of opinion or the tension has gone up, something high stakes is going on, mm-hmm. she knows that I am going to need her to ask me open-ended questions, not make demands. Because if she makes demands, that's going to shut me down. Make sense?
Yeah.
And for me, I need to do my opposite, where normally I would say something like, I don't know what I think. I need to think more about it. Or I don't want to make a decision more. I need more time. Instead, I need to give like a concrete opinion.
Yeah.
I need to put something out there that gives her something to work with.
Wow. I love that. And I guess what underpins all of that, Annie, is to master self-leadership, you have to know yourself, right? Know yourself before you can lead yourself.
Yes.
And I think that's really key.
Yes, yes. One thing I want to add with that is what's great about this kind of quiz and what I appreciate about all the personality quizzes out there, right? Like whether it's DISC or the Myers-Briggs or there's so many now. What I appreciate about them is that not only do you learn more about yourself, that's number one, but the second thing is you learn that people are not like you.
Yes.
it's
a revelation, isn't it?
It is, because somebody that is highly confrontive and very decisive, they typically can't understand how could somebody be avoidant? Don't you know that things just get worse when you avoid them?
Yeah.
That's what somebody on that side would say. And it's like, well, no, that's not really how it works. My defense mechanisms, my responses under stress are just very different.
Yeah. And again, I think that there's a lot of reflection in that, and coming to those realizations is really key. And you've been a wonderful guest today, and I'm really grateful to you for taking the time out of your afternoon to come and talk to us. For everyone listening to this podcast, I would really get a copy of this book, The People Part. I have yet to find a more practical, hands-on user manual for leaders than this book, Annie. So I want to take a moment again to say thank you for writing, because I read it and go, this is exactly what I think should be in the hands of every business owner. I actually think this should be in the hands of, you know, probably kids going through school and learning things, because it's not just applicable to business, but it's an incredibly useful book. And so for everyone listening to this show, go and get a copy of this book. If you do nothing else out of this podcast, get this book and read it from cover to cover, highlight it, make notes in it. There's exercises to do. There's a whole bunch of things. And I promise you, if you read the book and take action on what Annie suggested there, it will change your life. I really mean that very genuinely. This has been a book that I think is one of the best books I've read. So thank you so much, Annie.
Jesse, thank you so much. Yeah. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's an absolutely brilliant book, and I'm just so happy, to have a copy of it, but I'm delighted that someone took the time to write it. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Annie, for people that want to read more about your work, read blogs, read articles, resources, where's the best place for them to go once they've got the book as well?
Yeah, to come to our website, and it's leadingedgeteams.com.
Fantastic.
That's where you can find pretty much everything about us. And it's very easy to reach us. There's this place right on there that you can schedule an appointment with us. We love to meet new people and hear about your business, you know, whether you're interested in becoming a client soon or you just want to meet us and get a little bit of free advice. We love talking to business owners.
Yeah, lovely. Well, Annie, thank you once again. Really, really generous. And I've just enjoyed talking to you. And as I said, I could probably talk to you for 5 days on this stuff, because it's a rich vein of interest. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.